2023 was the most challenging year of my life so far. I connected deeply with my own shortcomings and inadequacies. I recognized where I don't yet fully embody the change that I want to see in the world. It felt like I pulled away a curtain. And then I realized that what was playing out on my personal level is actually a representation of the dynamics at play in our whole consciousness, spirituality, personal development bubble. I realized that most of us, including me, are actually still more part of the problem than of the solution. And if we want to truly build a more beautiful world our hearts know as possible, then we are invited to raise to a completely different level in our potential. If our collective actions would stay how they are right now, I'm not very optimistic about the future of human civilization. And when I connect to my son and him turning 2 years old in a couple of weeks, I'm deeply in contact with my commitment of handing over a world to him and his generation that is actually not fucked. A world where he is able to grow up in peace and love and abundance. And I think I'm speaking here for all parents. There's a deep desire inside all of us to create a world where our children can grow up in a way that is truly in alignment. But if we want to do this, we are invited to expand tremendously. And I want to share in this video my perspective of where I believe that we are not living up to our potential. Over the past couple of years, but quite intensively in 2023, I observed what is going on in the world and how this relates, what is playing out on the global scale to what is playing out on our personal individual scale. And I want to do a brief status quo analysis of where we are right now. I found out that human beings consume 2,000 calories a day endosomatically, i.e. the food we put in our mouth. But we consume 200,000 calories a day exosomatically, like everything else that we consume. The house that we are living in, the electricity, the transportation, products that we consume. Like we consume 100 times more than we are aware of. And this is only made possible through 500 billions of free workers that are at our disposal. And these 500 billions of free workers are the use of oil, coal, and natural gas. Like the fossil hydrocarbons that we pull out of the earth and that we use to manufacture everything around us. And they were stored in the earth over millions of years, and we are extracting them in order to fuel our consumption lifestyles. Since our discovery of them during the 18th and 19th century in the Industrial Revolution, they are pretty much fueling our lifestyles. Almost nothing of what is currently normal in our lives would be possible without our use of oil, coal, and natural gas. Like the car we use to drive to work, the electricity in our home, the heating, the cooling, like all the things that we buy, like pretty much everything around us is manufactured either out of these components or by using them. But there is one problem. These 500 billions of free laborers are collectively reducing their working hours and they will be retiring soon. According to the MAHB, the Millennium Alliance for Humanity and Biosphere, we will run out of oil by 2052, out of natural gas by 2060, and out of coal by 2090. But our extraction of natural resources from the earth doesn't stop there. Since 1970, we cut 17% of the Amazon rainforest, often referred to as the lungs of the earth. Every single day, all over the world, 30,000 of hectares, bigger than the size of the national park of this beautiful mountain behind me, is cut every single day just to manufacture all the products that we buy. And this is closely interlinked with the fact that over the same period since 1970, we human beings, through our activities, killed 70% of the animals, insects, and fish on this planet. The current species extinction rate is 1,000 times higher than in pre-agricultural times 10,000 years ago. Like, countless species that once inhabited this beautiful planet don't longer exist. But for the living beings that survive, things don't really look much better. We humans have transformed the animal kingdom. There are now 15 times more biomass of farm animals, like cows, pigs, and chickens, than there is biomass of wild animals. That means a staggering 94% of animals on this planet endure lives behind closed bars. They live undignified existences and serve ultimately as mere commodities in our food production system. They will all get slaughtered just to fulfill our craving for food. But even if we look into the plant-based food that we humans consume and the animals we eat, things don't look much better. The majority of plant-based food we produce comes from vast monocultural farms where only a single crop is cultivated. Rice, wheat, and corn, these three crops, make up 60% of our global plant-derived calories. So we are really far away from the abundance on our plates that our bodies need in order to be able to thrive. Now, one-sided diets are only made possible through the widespread use of pesticides. The German company Degesch invented the poison used in Auschwitz and other concentration camps. And after the war has ended, US chemical companies took this poison, brought it to the US, and rebranded it as pesticides for American farms. The consequence of this monocultural farming, along with widespread use of those pesticides, is substantial topsoil erosion. In many parts of the world, only 60 years of harvests remain in the soil. And this leads us to the buzzword of our times, climate change. The cutting of our forests, the burning of all the oil and coal, and the destruction of healthy soil, along with the billions of farm animals, all contribute to the slow but steady warming of our atmosphere. Global temperatures have risen by 1.2 degrees Celsius since the late 19th century. The result is the substantial rising of global sea levels, 20 centimeters, due to the melting of the Arctic ice in this period. And the consequences are extreme weather events like tsunamis and hurricanes, the change of the rainfall pattern, which might lead to food insecurities for billions of people. It's estimated that by 2050, there could be up to 1 billion climate change refugees. But these people will not leave their homes in a peaceful way. Wars become inevitable. But even the winners in this exploitation game are losing. We, on a deeper level, sense the destruction of the sacred and turn to a whole array of distractions. Excessive social media use, overworking, the consumption of highly processed food, porn, all sorts of drugs are the result. So we collectively become more and more numb and unhappy, with our children bearing the burden of all that. They grow up in artificial living environments, fed with salt, sugar, and fat, and being glued to screens as early as the age of 3 or 4. And after that, they are squeezed through an education system that extinguishes the very last bit of life inside them and the innate genius that they were born with. So how the fuck should they be able to solve the issues that we handed over to them? This is not possible. Let's call the multitude of issues on our planet that we are faced with right now the meta crisis. But whose fault is all that? Who is to blame? No, it's not the greedy bankers, nor the corrupt politicians, nor the evil Illuminati. the state of the world is just the sum of our individual decisions. And while these dynamics got more and more obvious to me over the last time, I always thought of myself as somebody who's already quite far on his journey of living in alignment with the planet. Maybe you can relate to this. You're probably eating vegan or vegetarian, practicing meditation or other mindfulness practices. You're not going shopping every day, and you quite likely see yourself as a responsible human being. And this is exactly what I thought of myself. The issues of the world felt more like out there to me. But then there was this one moment where I was directly confronted with my own hubris. The moment where I discovered that I'm still far away from living in true alignment with the whole. I calculated my ecological footprint. So let me walk you through the ecological footprint calculator. I think this could be really interesting for you. First question, how often do you eat animal-based products? Me, never. I'm eating vegan. How much of the fruit that you eat is unprocessed, unpackaged, or locally grown? Actually, most of it. Living here in the mountains of Bali, and I'm almost exclusively eat what is growing around me, 95%. What is the type of your home? Freestanding with running water. I'm currently living in a tent. A tent is not available, so I will select straw or bamboo. That comes closest, I guess. How many people live in your household? 3. What is the size of your home? Like really small, around 20 square meters. Yes, I have electricity, and my home is very energy efficient. I don't need to use any heating or cooling because of the climate that I'm living in, and I don't use lots of electricity. There is no energy coming from renewable resources as far as I know it. That's one of the drawbacks here. I generate much less trash than my neighbors. I mostly generate only food waste, which can be thrown onto the compost. I travel each week around 100 kilometers by car and around 150 kilometers by motorcycle. The fuel efficiency is not too high for both vehicles, unfortunately. I don't carpool. There's no option for that here in Bali. There's no public transportation either. I fly around 60 hours. I estimated that's around 2 long distance flights to Germany and back, like 2 long distance flights a year, back and forth. So 4 flights of around 15 hours. And that calculates my ecological footprint. Let's check the results. If everyone lived like me, we would need 2.4 Earths. This is the measure of my lifestyle and all my actions and all my decisions and all my consumption on this planet. And after realizing how far I am still from living in full alignment with the planet and living on an ecological footprint of 1, living a lifestyle that would actually work for everybody, then I got curious, how is it for other people in our whole like consciousness bubble? First, I checked the ecological footprint of the conscious entrepreneur from Berlin, living in a nice loft and taking the electric scooter, going to the co-working space while enjoying their oat milk cappuccino and the mango smoothie bowl, and from there on working on their dreams. This fictitious person got an ecological footprint of 4.3. The next scenario I checked was the minimalist spiritual seeker and world traveler, traveling from one yoga retreat to the next in India and Thailand and in Bali while enjoying their coconuts and living in small, tiny houses. This resulted in an ecological footprint of 5.0. And then I got even more curious. How is it for the boss babe living la vida loca and flying to Dubai, LA, and Paris, consuming all sorts of luxury fashion items while enjoying frequent parties with other like-minded people. And this resulted in an ecological footprint of 9.8. But none of us are inherently evil. Let's face it, we're living in a system where arriving at an ecological footprint of 1.0, a lifestyle that would work for everybody, is almost impossible. Good intentions are not enough. We're living in an economic system that's based on interest. So for every loan we take, there's an interest rate we need to repay in the future. And until we repay this fully, the interest rate is compounding. Means we need to pay interest on the interest rate. And the result is an ever-growing debt balloon. So for every loan you take to start your business, send your kids to college, or build your dream house, you need to work more and more and more just to be able to repay your debt. And now multiply this by a billion. Almost every business around the world is participating in this behavior. So a global growth imperative is the result. Basically, we are faced with two options. Either continue converting the natural world into money at an ever-growing rate just to be able to repay our collective debt, or stop repaying our debt, embracing a crash in the world economy with massive unemployment and civil unrest as the result. But even if we continue to kick the can further down the road and basically push our problems that we face nowadays into the future, it becomes more and more harder just to be able to repay our debt because of dwindling natural resources. So I believe the crash is inevitable, but we get to decide how much nature is left when that happens. And participating in the system is not optional. If you're earning and spending euro, US dollars, Indonesian rupiahs, or any other form of government-issued currency, you are perpetuating this dynamic. So why can't we just stop it? Why can't we just stop this altogether? Because the current system deeply connects to our longing for unconditional love. Due to the standard way of birthing children in the Western world in sterile settings, devoid of love, and then the experiences these children have in their earliest years, not getting enough skin-to-skin contact, not being unconditionally loved and cared for because their parents are so overwhelmed, a hole inside themselves stays where a basic trust into life could have developed. So a perceived emptiness stays. A feeling of a deep desire for home, for roots, for being unconditionally cared for. And as a result, we stay needy children, even if we grow up into adults, and we act like them. We crave for more money, more status, more positions, in the desperate hope that they somehow make us feel whole and complete. So when you see entrepreneurs being on the hunt for passive income, it's nothing else than their desperate need of fulfilling their unfulfilled desire of being unconditionally cared for by their mothers, but this time with money in the role of the mother. The same is true for our constant pursuit of traveling to faraway places. Maybe this feeling of wholeness and being unconditionally loved and cared for will be perceived when sitting in an ayahuasca ceremony with a wise shaman, aka parent figure, in Peru, or by chasing for exotic sexual partners in Thailand or Costa Rica. So if we multiply this dynamic by 8 billion, this equals our global situation. Our search for completion, our search for fulfilling this deeply perceived emptiness inside ourselves makes us unable not to consume, makes us unable not to participate in the destruction of our planet. That is inevitable. By now we probably realize this incredible complexity. Everything is interconnected. There are no obvious solutions. So we are invited to tackle all the issues at the same time. Building an economic system that doesn't possess this growth imperative. designing an education system that preserves the innate genius of our children, moving away from fossil hydrocarbons to more sustainable energy sources, and leaving behind our highly processed diets with lots of animal products and shift towards veganism. But a veganism that is not characterized by chia seeds, passion fruits, and wakame algae from the other side of the planet. We are invited to shift towards a more regional and a more seasonal lifestyle. In community, because there we are able to, over time, find the deep healing we're looking for and to realize that true fulfillment can be obtained through external sources. But everything begins in us. No amount of changes on the inside, on the outside can fix the mess that we created. We are invited to look deep, 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 deep within. I believe that the convergence of crises in our lifetimes presents us with one very clear message. Humanity needs to step into its proper role and to leave behind the childish behavior of taking more and more and more while perpetuating the destruction of everything and everyone around us. The role humanity was given by Gaia, our collective Mother Earth, 2 million years ago. To be the custodial species of this planet. The stewards, the caretakers, the guardians of the whole ecosystem. There is an Aboriginal story about how humans received this role. When we invented the first stone tools, we were approached by the saber-toothed tiger, who was by the time the apex predator, the most powerful force on this planet. And he said, "With your use of technology, you now have the capability to destroy the whole ecosystem, to dominate it. May you have the wisdom instead to steward it." But so far, humanity didn't embrace this role. Humanity is still acting like this musclehead who, through the abundant use of steroids, became so brawny that his intelligence couldn't keep up with his physical capabilities, and this leads to him non-stop harassing everybody else around him. If we wish to continue to be a part of this beautiful planet into the indefinite future, we are invited to leave behind our selfish impulse gratifications and transition into this newfound role as a custodian of the whole. We are invited to put our enormous capabilities to good use of the whole, because I believe with great power comes great responsibility. So humanity is faced with three big Herculean tasks. First, embody this new identity as a custodian of Gaia in each area of our lives. Whereas the rest of humanity blindly follows their own short-sighted desires, a custodian of Gaia embraces a whole system's bird's eye view. We treat our bodies and our minds as the infinitely powerful entities that they are. We surrender to the greater forces, we go out of the way, so that we become the vessel through which exactly what is necessary can be brought down to this planet. This is how a custodian of Gaia approaches every area of his life. Relationships, work, health, and so on. Our second big Herculean task that we're faced with is to design alternative living systems where everybody is able to thrive. All the fancy co-living projects out there, in my opinion, don't go far enough. Either vast swathes of nature are cut, or the setting is only dedicated to crypto hustlepreneurs without children, or the local people get exploited, or pseudo-sustainable luxury mansions are built that still put the burden on this beautiful planet, or it's a let's escape to the forest and hope the global issues won't affect us kind of setting. We aim to build the most aligned living conditions where not only we, but every human being and every other living being around us is able to thrive. And our third big Herculean task is to manifest the new Earth on a global scale. While we are working on embodying this newfound identity of a custodian of Gaia in our personal lives, we simultaneously work on redesigning the global systems. imagine a monetary system that would be in alignment with the biosphere, or an educational system that would be in alignment with the innate genius of our children, or companies that are dedicated not only to amassing financial resources, but to the thriving of all its stakeholders, where the employees thrive and the founders thrive and the partners thrive and the local village is thriving and nature is thriving. I believe it's about rethinking politics, culture, infrastructure, basically the whole narrative of a good life. This is our third big Herculean task, and the one that completes the other two. If we embark on this journey where currently there are no obvious answers, if we still embark on this journey without knowing the exact path, we are able to build a true paradise for us and every living being on this beautiful planet. These questions truly fascinate me without knowing all the answers, but I'm determined to figure them out. I'm currently writing a seasonally book series. It's called Gaia's Custodians. Every couple of months there will be a new issue. And in the first one, we dive really deep into the intricacies of the meta crisis that we talked about today, how we came up to be in this situation, and how to arrive with possible and viable action steps to create the more beautiful world, including an in-depth exploration of how to build living systems for custodians and future custodians in community, in nature, where multiple generations are living together in harmony and mature and wise adults work on approaches to the meta crisis. If my perspective is of interest to you, I want to invite you to pre-order the book. And please gift it to your friends, family members, and co-workers that might be interested in the dynamics we explored in the past minutes. We have a bunch of sweet gifts for people who would like to order more than one book. Gaia's Custodians is available as an ebook or print version. It's printed in the most sustainable way possible by the world's leaders in ecological printing. So after reading it, you can literally throw your book on the compost. And the book is living in the sacred economy, so there is no fixed pricing. Besides coverage of print and transaction costs and a modest compensation for the team that is currently assembling this beautiful piece of art, you can decide by yourself what kind of contribution you want to make to this project. This is our little contribution to the kind of economy we want to live in. So if the whole spectrum of topics we dove into today is of interest for you and you feel a resonance and you don't shy away from this enormous complexity that we are presented with, then I want to invite you to pre-order the book. The ebook version is expected to be finished by late February/early March, and the print version we project to be able to be shipped them in end of March or beginning of April. And of course, all the pre-orders will receive their copy of Gaia's Custodians first before we go into the regular release. And if right now there is a voice inside yourself that says, this is hopeless, I don't see any possibility how we might solve the multitude of issues that we are faced with right now, I want to share a story with you. A story that shows the incredible power of the human spirit. I just finished a 1 month, four generational family co-living experiment. Four generations living together from age 1 until age 82. And as the last days approached, and my dad and his wife and my grandma prepared for their travel back to Germany, my grandma shared, actually, I don't want to go back, because at home I'm sitting in my own house and I'm lonely. I don't want to go back into this life. I like it here so much. I like to play with my great grandson, with Leona, every day. He lights up my spirit, and I like this so much. And I like being outdoors. I like Bali. And then I said to her, Grandma, I want to invite you to to live with here, open end. Just like be with here, be here with us. And when I reflect on her being my last grandparent, like all my other grandparents already died, and then imagining her growing old and someday dying in some kind of nursing home just by herself while being cared for by people that don't really love her, this feels so wrong. This feels so, so wrong. I want all my family to be close to me. And of course, that's difficult. There are many, many, many different challenges that arise when different generations come together, but it feels like it's the only path. And I expressed all that to her, and I said to her, Grandma, I want to spend more time with you, and I want to see you spending time with your great-grandson and him spending time with you. That feels so right. Please stay here with us. And of course, her heart said, yes, I absolutely want this. But her head said, you're fucking 82. What, like, how dare you? Like, all your friends and all your neighbors at home will say you're absolutely crazy for at age 82 without having your husband. My grandpa died 3 years ago. That you stay here in Bali, like, and this clash inside herself was present up until the last hour before the flight back. But then she said, yes, I will follow the direction of my heart and I will stay here in Bali with you. And I know this frightens me deeply to the core of my essence, but I will make this decision. And she did. My dad canceled her flight ticket back and she moved in here with us. And we are living door to door. And when I'm finished recording this video, I will enjoy some delicious mangoes together with her for breakfast and just enjoy the beauty of life. And for me personally, the story of my grandma at age 82 making such a huge shift in her life, although she's afraid, although she doesn't have all the answers, this story exemplifies what is possible. And maybe it will give you the hope you need to be able to embark on this journey. Thank you.